Miami Memoirs presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of Florida attorney Lewis M. Ress. Miami Memoirs uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. From multimillion-dollar land deals to the ghostly aftermath of an Everglades plane disaster via a prematurely deep-frozen cat, these tales feature a parade of unforgettable characters, all sharply observed by a storyteller with a very human empathy for ordinary and extraordinary individuals caught up in the law.
Lewis has just released a new book, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Fans of strange cases and wild tales will need no introduction to the author's brilliant and fast-paced storytelling, laced with salty evocations of the human carnival of the era and shot through with compassionate insight. From advising the heir to Colonel Sanders and falling out with Buddy Hackett to nighttime jogging with Vitas Gerulaitis, the stories keep on coming. Larry the charismatic Wheeler dealer needs to be rescued from yet another risky deal, and a bridge-playing mobster needs help to find his missing daughter. All this and more, along with sage advice against buying a lottery ticket, you might win. Welcome to round two. And now, let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Lewis Ress. I'm Jeanette Garcia, your host, and this is episode 53, Questioning the U.S. Supreme Court. Okay, Lewis, this is a blockbuster. It's called Questioning the U.S. Supreme Court. Tell us all about it. I'm sure you have quite a lot that you're going to challenge here.
Hello, my dear hostess, Jeanette Garcia.
Hello.
How are you this morning?
Good, good. I jumped right in. I just want to hear so much about this.
Well, questioning the United States Supreme Court. I'm a member of the United States Supreme Court Bar. And so I got sworn in when I started law practice. I thought maybe I'm going to need to go to the Supreme Court. And it's a lovely plaque. I think you can see it right up there in the corner of my office.
Oh,
Supreme
wow.
Supreme Court of the United States of America. It's a huge plaque.
Beautiful.
And it's very impressive for a law office.
We got to take a photo and add it to your blog. For real, yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do that.
Yeah.
So I'm a member, and of course, I'm certified to practice law before the court. That's what it means. Here I am questioning the United States Supreme Court. Who am I to question the United States Supreme Court? My God, I'm certainly not as good a lawyer or an experienced judge as they. They're terrific. They're highly qualified, highly intelligent, highly experienced people. Who am I to dare question their decisions? Well, not only am I going to question it today, this is not in any of my books, by the way. I got ticked off, and I did this out of my, I got angry, and I said, I'm going to show people about the court. I'm going to question the court. I'm going to apologize on behalf of the court as a member of the bar of the court. I'm going to do an apology today to all the people that have been wronged by the court and how bad the decisions have been. And I'm going to tell you maybe about 13 horrible decisions of the court.
Yeah.
But I'll get there. You know, I'm 91 years old, and I'm a lawyer with over 66 years
of practice.
That's a long 66 years of law practice. And I never even had a case before the court. I had one I thought would go up, but it didn't. I just recently had the opportunity to read the entire 98-page proposed opinion in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health. That's the one that's going to overrule Roe v. Wade, the proposed order that's pending before the Supreme Court now. By the time people get around the world, listen to this, they'll probably have an answer to that. And they'll probably do a cutout of a little bit here and there and try to soften the opinion. But it was a wild opinion. I also read parts of the transcript of the oral argument before the United States Supreme Court on the Dobbs case. And I was startled. I read a statement by Justice Sotomayor, who's a very smart lady, and much smarter than I am, by the way. And she said, quote, "Will this institution survive the stench that this decision creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?"
Did justice?
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Can you imagine in open court a justice saying that, an associate justice, during the oral argument?
Yeah, I was going to say, did she really say that? Because it's pretty wild.
I'm quoting. That's wow. A quote from the transcript I found. You know, I'm not that old that I can't still read, but I spent a lot of time reading that stuff. I headlined that. I underlined that.
Mm-hmm.
The average opinion of the Supreme Court, I did some research, runs 4,750 words, or 9.4 pages if you do 500 pages words per page. It took Justice Samuel Alito 98 pages, or about 49,000 words, plus a 31-page appendix, plus 118 footnotes to strip away women's rights to an abortion. The court is about to reverse Roe v. Wade, which is the 1973 decision, finding that a Texas law criminalizing abortion violated a woman's right of privacy. And that was, the woman's right of privacy was implicit in the liberty guaranteed under the Due Process Clause in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, and therefore the Texas law was unconstitutional.
Mm.
Well,
what does the proposed decision in the Dobbs case do?
What does it do?
Yeah.
The proposed decision in Dobbs versus Jackson gives a number of reasons to support the reversal of the Roe case. I wondered what Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg would do or would have said.
Yeah.
I'll tell you more. But the Dobbs decision, is predicated on the theory that the United States Constitution does not specifically mention the right of privacy. Therefore, it doesn't exist.
Oh.
Nor do these are strict constructionalists. This is wild stuff. Nor does the Constitution mention that a woman has any right to an abortion. And in fact, it doesn't even mention women.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, no such rights exist. The opinion provides that to be held protected under the 14th Amendment, the rights must be deeply rooted in the nation's history and tradition, and implicit in the concept of ordered liberty, and the right of abortion is not. That's what it says.
Oh.
It finds that the decision in Roe was egregiously wrong from the start, and that it's time to return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives. That is, in other words, bury it in the ground, kill it,
mm-hmm.
destroy it, choke it.
Right.
Because the states...
what are they going to do?
22 of them already have terrible restrictions on abortion. I'll tell you more about that. So now you have Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett going to sign this order. That's 5-4.
Hmm.
And the reasoning is archaic. And it goes back to the literal provisions of the Constitution. You got to read the Constitution as of the date it was written and interpret it as of the date it was written.
Mm-hmm.
And so if women aren't mentioned, women don't exist.
Wow.
Under the Constitution. And if the right isn't given to you under the Constitution specifically, then you don't have it. Doesn't
mm-hmm.
exist. Well, that, you know, bites you in the, and then wait till you hear how it bites you in the back if you live like that. You know, they say you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Anyhow, what will the states do, you may ask? Well, it's interesting to note that in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, a case that was decided 20 years after Roe in 1992, Justices Sandra Day O'Connor and Anthony Kennedy and David Souter anticipated Justice Sotomayor's warning, and they said that the court would pay a terrible price for overturning Roe and attacking Roe's concept of liberty for women to act in society and to make reproductive decisions.
Hmm.
And the Planned Parenthood stands for the proposition that the states cannot place an undue burden on a woman's right to seek an abortion. So other justices have commented, too, about women's rights to control their own bodies.
And what else is inconsistent in the proposed order?
Well, all of the justices on the Supreme Court seem to agree to the significance of judicial precedent. In other words, that's called stare decisis. The concept of stare decisis is the history of the court. When the court makes a decision, that's binding on future cases.
Right.
And that becomes the law of the land.
That's why I have to be careful, yeah.
Yeah. That's what makes the law stable, so that you can rely on the decisions. If you intend, now they're going to reverse a case that was established for almost 50 years without any significant change in either the facts surrounding the decision or the law or the circumstances of society. You can say, well, things have changed. There's been a new law. There's been a law to preserve, to stop discrimination or freedom from discrimination in employment or to stop discrimination by against age, and therefore the old law changes. That happens. There's a reason for the change. It has to be a logical reason based on change of facts or change in society. Here there's no change since Roe v. Wade. Society hasn't changed. The statistics haven't changed. The arguments haven't changed. And it's the same. But they're going to change the decision. They're just going to reverse it. So, that brings up the issue of what the court is doing. Well, how can you explain it? The only way you can explain it is by bias. And that is not what the court wants you to accept as they just say, well, it was irrational, it was wrong, we're correcting a wrong. But we'll get there. We're getting there. You know where the Supreme Court gets its authority?
No. Where does it get it?
Well, where does the Supreme Court get its authority to review laws and determine their constitutionality? It's not in the Constitution, so it doesn't exist.
Oh.
It comes from the case of Marbury versus Madison. Hey, wait a minute. The right of judicial review, that is the right of the court to determine if something is constitutional or not, was created by Chief Justice John Marshall in 1803, who wrote in the opinion of Marbury versus Madison, which by dicta, it was just a statement that a dicta is outside of the direct issue of the case. It's just a comment by the judge. He said, we have the right to establish judicial review, and we can determine if a law is unconstitutional. What about Justice Alito's rule or finding in the Dobbs decision that if it's not in the Constitution, it doesn't exist? Well, the right
That's
of judicial
then.
View
yeah.
is not in the Constitution. Therefore, it doesn't exist. Therefore, the court has no jurisdiction to reverse Roe v. Wade.
Right.
Because it has no right to determine constitutionality. Maybe the court might want to rethink Dobbs based on its own limitation of its power to engage in judicial review, and therefore this power doesn't exist.
So I haven't heard that before. Are you the only one to come up with this theory? Doubt it.
No. I thought I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I said, maybe I'm foolish. Maybe it's stupid because it's really stretching it to come up with such a theory. But someone else came up with the theory back in 1805, when the Constitution was just coming into effect. So you're going to go back and interpret it? Well, let's go back and look at this. In 1803, this was written by a very important person. The power of judicial review will make the judiciary a despotic branch. That was written by Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, wow.
He was writing to Abigail Adams at the time. And Abigail Adams' husband was involved in giving the commissions for the judgeships that were involved in the issue of Marlborough versus Madison.
Okay.
Next, he said, how dexterously he, John Marshall, can reconcile law to his personal biases. That was 1810.
Yeah.
Well, if you just change a few names, and put
similar
this
opinion.
Jefferson telling you, this is the guy that wrote the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson. Then he said, Marbury, in another letter in 1823, He said, Marbury versus Madison is continually cited by bench and bar as if it were settled law without any animadversion on its being merely an obiter dissertation of the Chief Justice. In other words, obiter dictum. It's an incidental expression, not essential to the decision, and not establishing precedent. That they were using to establish precedent and making it essential to the decision.
Right, yeah.
So, and it created this power that never existed.
Right.
So if you go back to when the Constitution was created in order to interpret it, we have Thomas Jefferson saying that it, the court's without jurisdiction. And if it's not in the Constitution, gentlemen, you said that if it's not in the Constitution, it doesn't exist. Well, it's not in the Constitution, what you're doing.
Yeah,
so
that's an issue.
Judge not, lest ye be judged.
Yeah. So you mentioned that that this was a very important decision. So how did this? How does this affect now, currently?
Well, the result of the proposed decision is that, well, Justice Alito makes a comment. I read it. He said, well, this is only going to have a minimal effect on life, you know, and on the world. I and many of us disagree, many of us. Turning personal privacy rights back to the states opens up laws making abortion a crime and even leaving for a state where it's legal in order to get an abortion a crime, trying to get one a crime. And you can be reported for attempted to get one. And if your husband wants to make money, he can report you for trying to get an abortion and make a $10,000 fee by reporting
it's
his
terrible.
Wife. There's nothing that prohibits that. Well, 43 states have laws involving gestation limitations in abortion. 22 states restrict the status of abortion. 33 states limit state funds for abortion.
Wow.
So it's you're sending it back to the states is a cop-out. And it really is going to destroy a woman's right to control her own body.
Yeah, that's
and
terrible.
I'm not, I don't like abortion personally. And I don't like it. But a woman, that's a right to her body.
Right.
And until the fetus is viable, until it's moving, you can't convince me that it's not a woman's right to terminate her pregnancy. So, and then after that, you get into a discussion of when does life start. I know when life starts in the Jewish religion. In the Catholic religion, life starts when the sperm enters the egg. In the Protestant religion, it starts when the fetus is quick. And in the Jewish religion, it starts when the dog dies and the kids go to college.
That's a good one. I like it.
So, anyhow, the states are going to outlaw contraception. They're going to outlaw IUDs. They're going to outlaw the pill. They're going to, doctors are facing up to life imprisonment and a $100,000 fine.
My gosh.
Aiding and abetting an abortion, you can get up to a year in jail and a $10,000 fine. And that's where you're heading.
Yeah. I mean, what's next after that? They just
and
keep
gonna,
controlling everything.
The pill, the, you know. And then the next is going to be outlawing gay and lesbians and saying that they're involved in sodomy and causing them to go to jail for having their own personal lives, their privacy. Well, no more does the right of privacy doesn't exist. It's implicit in the 14th Amendment. It doesn't say privacy. Or does it? I don't know.
Wow.
I don't think it does. So what about stay? I think it's due process, life, liberty, and being deprived of life and liberty without the due process of law. That's the 14th Amendment.
Oh.
So what about states nullifying gay marriages? It's going to happen. And you're going to get Texas, and you're going to get wonderful, creative, beautiful states like Louisiana and Mississippi, wonderful, far-reaching social... socially advanced states, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to throw people in jail.
Yeah.
It's going to be a witch hunt and a purge.
And did the majority of justices agree to the Dobbs decision based on their social, religious, and political bias?
As a matter of fact, I can't find any other basis to really explain their decision. If you look, and I'll get into it, but if you look Amy Barrett, Amy Coney Barrett, said that she believed that the women should carry their pregnancy to birth, and they can always put their children up for adoption. Hmm. After all, she's adopted children, and so take a look at her. Hmm. Well, take a look at the orphanages, and take a look at how many children are put into foster homes, and how people are not supportive of adopted children,
mm-hmm.
and how
they go through a lot.
Treated in a poor way.
I don't think
the Catholic Church is about to support children who are born without, you know, unwanted, put up for adoption. I don't think they're about to support them. So there's a problem. The church has enough financial problems as it is.
Hmm.
I don't have any loss of respect for the court, but I think the American people will. I think people believe that the court made an irrational, unjustified political decision based primarily on personal biases.
Mm-hmm.
A large majority of the country has come to accept women's rights to an abortion as the settled law of the land. And this was something that these people were put on the court to do, mm-hmm. specifically to do by the president. And I'll talk to you about Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump and what they did to the court. And what they're doing to the courts. But
What can we do to cure this problem, in your opinion?
Well, people ask me that, too, a lot. What's the solution? That's tough. Justice Roberts might get a hold of Justice Kavanaugh, Brett Kavanaugh, and even possibly Justice Gorsuch, trying to interfere with the decision, but trying to have an open talk with them and explain that he's interested in preserving the respect for and the integrity of the court, and they should reconsider their decision. He might be able to make them rethink it.
Mm-hmm.
They may want to write a concurring opinion that waters it down.
Mm-hmm.
Then what else can you do? Well, there can be a call to all Americans who feel betrayed to create enough representatives in the legislature to create more justices on the court. In other words, pack the court.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back to the Roosevelt days in the 1935s when he had all these different alphabet organizations, the National Recovery Act, the NRA, mm-hmm. and other things like that. NRA was National Recovery Act, not the National Rifle Association.
Yeah.
And they had the CCC, and they had the Interstate Commerce Commission. And the Supreme Court started to rule that they were all unconstitutional because they weren't in the Constitution. And Roosevelt said, look, fellows, I'm going to pack the court. I got the votes, and we're not going to have nine. Where does it say in the Constitution there are nine justices? Does it say anyplace?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't. So there used to be six, and there were up to 10. So it depends.
Yeah.
And the Congress can pass a law increasing the number of justices.
Huh.
That would solve a lot of the problem. And another thing, Congress has the right to determine the duties of the justices. So you could divide the court into sections.
Hmm.
If you increase the court, you can say, well, the first section will be violent crimes, murder and violent crimes.
Hmm.
And you can make just criminal decisions under the Constitution. And you can put Kavanaugh and Barrett and Gorsuch and make Alito the head of that group, and they're gone.
Hmm.
They're out of your life.
Right.
Then you have a different admiralty, and then you could have civil matters, issues between the states, treaties. Those are some of the things. Of course, they rarely come up, but you can put somebody in a closet that way. And you get rid of them, just the way they sent Newt Gingrich to England. You don't hear Newt Gingrich anymore. But he was closeted by the Republican Party.
Wow.
So they can closet you. Then you can impeach the offending people. That's very hard. You can amend the Constitution. That's pretty hard to do. And even changing, you got to get control of the of the Senate and the House mm-hmm. and the presidency, and that's hard. But if women got off their derrieres the way I was talking about in the last thing about doing something, being proactive, getting stop talking about it and start doing something about it, and they all started chatting with one another on the internet and meeting and supporting the idea that they were going to throw out these representatives who were voting anti-abortion and anti-women's rights.
I think we're trying.
I think you're going to try a lot harder. A lot harder, because you're dealing with you got
great
guys
opposition.
Up there with the gun lobby telling you that it's that the liberals are trying to steal your guns, take them away. They'll do anything to do it, and anything that limits guns is against America. Everyone has the right to an AK-47 in their home yeah. to defend their family. So, they're nuts.
Mm-hmm. And so how did we get here in the first place, into the situation?
What?
How did we get in the situation in the first place?
Well, how did it all come about?
Mm-hmm.
The people who feel abandoned now didn't get out and vote. So you have it goes back to the Reagan Republicans trying to take over the judiciary, which they did. One political party made it a major goal to stack the courts with young, extremely conservative judges who were vetted by the Federalist Society. The Federalist Society, which mostly comes out of Yale, it preaches a textualist and originality interpretation of the Constitution. In other words, let's go back to 1779, and that's where we're going to be. Of course, we didn't have electricity, we didn't have cars, we didn't have planes,
yeah.
we didn't have telephones, TVs, we didn't have anything.
A lot has changed.
So that's what they want you to live with, the candles and the
yeah.
dark ages. It's funny, because in the last year or so, one United States Senator, Mitch McConnell by name,
mm-hmm.
was able to block the appointment of a Supreme Court Associate Justice by President Obama. Obama was in his last year of office, and there's no such rule. He was going to nominate a representative, a justice for the mm-hmm. United States Supreme Court.
Right.
And now that person happens to be Attorney General, and they're not at all extremely liberal. They're very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to nominate him, but Mitch McConnell, who was the head of the Senate at the time, the controlling majority leader in the Senate, blocked it. And Mitch McConnell came up with a rule. And the rule he made up was that a president didn't have the right to appoint a justice in his last year of office, in the president's last year of office.
Oh, wow.
There is no such rule. He made that up. That, to me, is a fraud.
Yeah.
And I think he may be responsible. I think that may be a violation of the law. At the same, a senator reversed that ruling, that so-called ruling,
mm-hmm.
to allow President Trump to appoint Amy Coney Barrett, Justice of the Supreme Court, at the very end of Trump's term of election of office,
right.
the very last month. And he pushed the nomination through in record time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't do anything worse than that. I mean, that's reprehensible.
Yeah. He pretty much did what he said you couldn't do.
Mitch McConnell spent most of his career stacking the federal courts with Federalist Society people.
Mm-hmm.
Federalist Society vetted. They reviewed the list of nominees, and they selected who they would recommend from that list. And they are picking these judges. And you're talking about 60 federal judges, 6-0.
So it's a lot of power.
I keep my big mouth shut. But he's gotten away with it.
Yeah.
It's as bad as stealing an election.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an officer of the court, and I respect the American judicial system, but I'm not sleeping well at night.
Yeah, no, I can see why you wouldn't. I mean, there's things that keep me up, too, with what I'm seeing. There's a lot to talk about. Let's maybe start off by talking about the leaking of the proposed decision.
Oh, boy, the leak. Okay. Well, I'm just a little old man, and When they want to distract you or deflect an argument, they get involved in a side argument. And that's the same thing with guns. They talk about education or mental health issues, and that's called a deflection. And the leak is a deflection from the Dobbs decision. It's an attempt to deflect your interest and your attention and the emphasis to who leaked the thing. Well, I don't care who leaked it. I don't really think it's important. There have always been leaks in every government, sometimes by the people who call for the investigation. They leaked it themselves. The White House may leak something intentionally and then want an investigation on the leak to protest that they had nothing to do with it.
Very calculated.
So it's not a simple thing. I think, and I don't think the United States Supreme Court has any written internal rules with regard to leaking or sharing information. Justices are now making speeches. They're writing letters. They're addressing the Federalist Society. Judge Thomas addressed the Federalist Society. It's his pals. I think they have, the fact that they have internal meetings and discussions between themselves, they should respect that as confidential, and they should tell their staff that that should be confidential, and they might even create a set of rules. And then you got to follow the rules, or there's some kind of punishments.
Consequences to it,
But so far, there are no rules that I know of. And I think the Supreme Court has a lot of problems. And the problems isn't so much with the leak, which may have been a blessing in disguise for the American people.
Get a heads up on what's happening.
Yeah, who is the guy who the Pentagon Papers and I think his name was Daniels or something from the Washington Post that leaked the papers. And there are a lot of leaks. And a lot of them are helpful. So
they give us insider information.
I was looking at the hearings that they had when Amy Comey Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh were up for appointment to the court. They attended hearings and they answered questions. And they went to meetings in senators' offices and had interviews. And one of the senators made a comment. She said, during the interview, Brett Kavanaugh assured her that he would not reverse Roe v. Wade and that he would follow the precedent of the court, and that was precedent, and he would respect it. She said, I would have never voted for him if he hadn't told me that. And Amy Comey Barrett avoided those questions too, the same way. She said, well, it appears to be the established law, you know, of the court. Well, it was. I mean, it's like saying the door is open or the door is shut. Either it's open or shut or not, or halfway. But she didn't say that she wasn't going to slam it. So I was looking at the court and I you know, became critical. I think on behalf of the Supreme Court, we should apologize to the American people. I love these people. They dedicate their lives. Oh, by the way, I was going to tell you about the robes. They got their own internal problems, too. You know, they have these robes. They're wonderful robes, black robes. You know, they never had black robes originally. In the 1800s, they had red and white trim on their robes. Then they used to have the red ones were for, you know where it comes from? The robes come from the cap and gown at learning institutions, institutions. So this means intelligence, brains, learning, and you get these robes, and you get a hat to go with it. They don't wear hats. Some countries, they wear hats. And other countries, they wear wigs. In England, they wear wigs. So we have different. The robes of justice go back to 1792. Now, 1327 in England, the robes came in different colors. It was violet for the summertime, green for the winter, scarlet for special occasions. And the scarlet robe with the black scarf became popular. I'm getting to a point. And, of course, Adams, John Adams wanted wigs. And Jefferson says, no robes, that's, you know, very imperious. And
you're trying to get away from that.
Just wear a business suit. Well, Sandra Day O'Connor wore a little white Dickie. And so each, they changed it around a little. Well, the there is just tradition. and the rule of law. California requires judges to wear black robes. But Rehnquist, Judge Rehnquist, Chief Justice Rehnquist out there in the mall, I was never a big fan of his. Mm-hmm. So I never liked him as far as his decisions or his personality. I thought he was imperious. And I thought he was a very snooty guy. And he was Chief Justice, and he put four big gold stripes on the upper parts of his robe, on his arms. And it's like, you know, here comes Caesar.
Right.
I thought he was going to put a wreath on his head. But
what a guy.
But the new Chief Justice, who is Roberts, who is a very calm gentleman, a very nice, refined person, although I think he's overly conservative. But he did away with the gold stripes. He didn't put them on his. I was looking for the next, the epaulettes that were coming, the gold epaulettes that hang down. And then maybe there would be, I saw the royalty in England were marching for the Queen's Jubilee. And they had this gold rope all over their bodies.
Oh, boy. That's,
and gold ropes, that would be nice.
Next
and gold
step.
Chains. You could do it up pretty nice.
Yeah.
So they didn't. They did away with that. They caught themselves. The reason I tell the story about the robes, there's a point to the story. All my stories have a reason. Mm-hmm. It means to me that the court can catch itself and correct itself and take stock of itself and be critical of itself and then do something positive to undo what damage might be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the rule is here. The hope is that the court will undo the damage that's going to be done in this Dobbs decision.
Yes.
Well, so I got to talking to people. And they said, what were the worst decisions of the United States Supreme Court?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to apologize on behalf of the court because I'm a member of the bar. But they're really wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human beings. And they really try hard and they're well-meaning. And they do what's in their heart and in their minds. But sometimes you're biased by what's in your heart and in your mind. Because you have a set belief and you believe it's true. And you think God talks to you and this is part of your religion. And I respect that. But I take exception to it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, what's the worst decision of the United States Supreme Court?
Tell us, Lewis. What was it?
Oh, tell us, tell us, tell us. Dred Scott versus Sanford,
yes.
Number one, 1857. I apologize to every Afro-American black person for that decision. That is, they should, if you're going to do damage and be destructive, that would justify you burning down the Supreme Court building. Please don't do it. I'm not suggesting it.
God.
I'm saying, theoretically, it was the worst decision that you could ever come up with. By whom? What was it? Tell us what it was, Dred Scott. You remember
Dred
Scott.
Tell us the details.
Dred Scott was a slave who escaped to a non-slave state. And he married a woman who was free woman, not slave. And they came to get him. The owner came for him, and they were going to take him back to wherever he was, Alabama or something, and maybe North Carolina. And they said, he's my property. He's a slave. He's not a person. Is a slave a person under the Constitution? Every person has the right, you know, we the people. Is he a part of the people? Well, not the Supreme Court. No, 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 no. Justice Taney ruled that he has to be returned to his owner and that the rule, no person shall be deprived of their property without due process of law. That's property. He was property.
Oh, my gosh.
He wasn't a human being. And then Justice
That's
Taney
awful.
Decided that he would stick in a pretty good one. And he would say, pretty good one. He's a little dicta in here. He'd say, Afro-Americans, which he meant blacks, can never become citizens.
Wow.
That was a little dicta he stuck in. Dicta means not in the case, not nothing to do with returning the slave to his owner, but it was
imagine this in there.
They can never become citizens.
Wow.
Well, and that was a 7-2 decision by the court, and it was terrible, terrible, terrible. And there was a statue of Justice Taney. There were two of them in Baltimore and Annapolis. And I found they were removed in 2017. Took till 2017 to remove it. Can you imagine all that time? Boy, the black people didn't raise their mouth. You never heard anything from the blacks, from, black rights. Not a word.
Wow.
Somebody missed the boat there.
Yeah.
Hello, black people, wake up. And did you know that Justice Taney's statue was in the robing room of the United States Supreme Court, a bust of him?
Wow.
I saw it myself. It was in the old Supreme Court building.
That's terrible.
And it's up against the wall on this, towards the ceiling, leaning forward. And you can see it. It's a marble bust. And finally, it was removed, I think, last year.
Hmm.
Congress had to pass a law to remove Taney's statue. And there's a street named after him, too, in Philadelphia. I don't know if they did away with that. I found stuff. And the court never apologized.
Hmm.
You would think somewhere in one of these cases, rights cases, one of the justices would have been elegant enough to say, oh, but the dictum, a little dictum in there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another little bit of dictum. We really are sorry and apologize to the black people of the United States and of the world for the decision in Dred Scott.
Why do you think they haven't?
Because I don't think they're really as great people as they could be.
Hmm.
Great people do those things. And I think they're good people and well-meaning people and intelligent people. They have to rise to be great.
Hmm.
It's not easy.
Hmm.
Okay, number two on the list. I feel like I'm doing the bandstand on Saturday night with Snooki Lance and the best hits of the week. Okay, Buck versus Bell. Do you know Buck versus Bell?
No.
Nobody knows Buck versus Bell. You can ask any lawyer around town here. Pick up the phone now. Call and say, what was Buck versus Bell, my lawyer? Who? What?
Nobody knows it.
Buck versus Bell was a decision by Oliver Wendell Holmes in 1927, which okayed the forced sterilization of those with intellectual disabilities.
Oh, wow.
And accepted the concept of eugenics.
Wow.
Oh, not good.
Not good.
Oh, terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize to all the people who were sterilized, including a number of blacks, by these eugenicists who thought they were doing a great job. This has come Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
We're going to extinguish all the people who are mentally disturbed and who are deformed. If you have a bad leg, a stump leg, we're going to kill you. We're not going to sterilize you. You're not going to be able to pass that on.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, Korematsu versus the United States. That you might figure out. 1944, number three on the
camps?
Bandwagon.
Is it the internment camps?
Yeah, boy, are you smart. I knew you were smart. You're really smart.
It's not that tough.
What happened? President Roosevelt, that wonderful liberal, the Jewish people loved him. They adored him. They worshipped him. Well, of course, he turned down the Jewish boat that was trying to get into the United States and caused 500 Jews to die in concentration camps in Nazi Germany when he sent them back.
That's terrible.
He wasn't so liberal.
Yeah.
He was a real upper crust Protestant 1%er, and you can't come into my club type guy.
Hmm.
Eleanor beat him by 100 miles.
Right.
She was great. She was extraordinary. She was one of the people that I would qualify as being super, you know, really great.
Someone who deserves
she rose above all of that stuff.
Deserves the position of being a justice.
Yeah, she was terrific. Okay, and she was responsible in great part for the UN, for Dumbarton Oaks. That was her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Korematsu, what they did was they interned all the Japanese into concentration camps. They were, you know, not concentration camps, but they were prisons. And
right,
they gave them food and clothing and so on, but they were living in a prison.
Yeah.
And because they were worried that they would be loyal to the emperor and they would do a sabotage. Well, I can tell you, I can't find one act of sabotage conducted or even attempted by a Japanese American during World War II. Not one. Not only that, they served in the European theater of war in combat, one of the most decorated combat units. So what we did to them,
that's terrible.
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 terrible. Now, the Nazis and the Bund in New York City, they were in high heaven there. They had meetings Madison Square Garden. They marched with swastikas. They yelled Heil Hitler. And they were out doing stuff. And we would never think of putting American Nazis in jail, German Americans.
That's horrible.
How did they differ? Well, they were white.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't...
They were white.
They weren't mongrels from Asia.
Wow.
So they were treated with respect and dignity and given rights. And there was a lot of sabotage from the German-American community.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Number four, Plessy versus Ferguson. I'm going to go faster
too,
because I know you're going to fall. You're not going to fall asleep.
No,
but
of course
Plessy
not.
Versus Ferguson was separate but equal. That was segregation. It was separate, but it's not equal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that law went down with Brown versus Board of Education, and that stuff
right.
was supposed to be all done, and we were supposed to integrate our schools, and we had busing and everything. Well, and a lot of the black people will tell you that they got their first break in life when they got to a decent school because of busing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right around the corner here in North Miami where we're sitting, there's North Miami High School. Do you know how many whites in North Miami High School? There's about 1,000 kids in the school. How many whites?
Two.
I don't think there are any. I go there, I'm looking all the time. What about the other high school there North Dade? There's another one right up near the football stadium. Trying to think. Norwood High.
Norwood High.
How many whites there? Don't go with the counting machine. You won't need it. You can just bring one hand. I don't think you'll find five.
Right.
We didn't do it. The Supreme Court has let us down. They have not enforced desegregation. They used to have it. The courts, the federal courts, would rule on that stuff, and they haven't. And I think the United States Supreme Court owes the black people an apology, and they owe the whole country an apology because we should be integrating. We should all be mixing and be equal and feel comfortable. And if you want to be in your own community, fine. If you want to come and mingle with everybody else, you should be free to do that. Here we go, Citizens United. You know what that one is?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's another beauty. That's recent. That's another rare beauty. It says that a corporation is a person.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Can give unlimited amounts of money in politics. So that means this was about Hillary
Terrible.
Clinton. They did a movie on Hillary Clinton, and it was political, and it was paid for by some corporation. And they said, it's okay. You can do that. There's no limit on dark money.
Hmm.
Well, think of what that does for Russian money coming in to affect our elections.
Hmm.
They can fund through different corporations and entities, and no one's going to check on the source of the money.
Yep.
And there's no limit.
Yeah,
so
it gives
it really opens
a lot of
the
leeway.
Door.
Yeah.
And I think it's a terrible anti-democratic. It undermines the country and the election laws, and I think it's a mistake. And Bernie Sanders thinks so too, by the way. Not that I like to be in the same bed with him, but he's a lovely guy, and he's a great American, and he means well,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not a socialist. So, but I like to see checks with the word social in them. I get mine. Social Security. I tell all my Hispanic friends, you don't like socialism, you're going to vote Republican. Good for you.
Don't
just
cash out on your
when
Social
you get your
Security.
Check that says social.
Just rip it up.
Yeah, send it back
send
and tell
back.
Them you don't believe in
no.
it. I want to see how many come back.
Right.
Not many. So, the Voting Rights Act was reversed in part by the Shelby County Holder decision. Shelby County Holder, the case in letting the states to opt out of Medicaid when they put conditions on getting Medicaid. That was another great decision by Chief Justice Roberts. NFIB versus Sebelius. That's a terrible decision. These are the ones I'm upset about.
Mm-hmm.
Konich versus Thompson, Clarence Thomas. Justice Thomas in his He's a very charming person, personally, and I'm sure he's well-meaning. But man, that one, he made it easy for states to opt out of that one, he gave prosecutional immunity for suppressing exculpatory evidence. In other words, the prosecutor had evidence that would have let this guy that was found guilty off the hook. He showed that he wasn't guilty. The prosecutor didn't share the evidence, didn't produce it, hid it. Mm-hmm. And they said it's okay, he's got immunity. And allowed to do that.
No, what?
That's a terrible, terrible, terrible
thing.
That
is horrible.
I mean, when somebody does that, you're destroying someone's life.
Yeah.
I can't see how they do things like that. They come up with stuff. So, and then, you know, going back to this labor law where the court said that New York labor law can't limit bakery workers' hours. You know, there's a lot of cases like that. That are bad. That was the Bowers versus Hardwick. Did you know about the Kilo versus City of New London?
No.
Where they allowed the City of New London to confiscate and to take your property by eminent domain and give it to a developer to make money. They could take your home, force you to sell it, take it by eminent domain, and give it to a developer to develop the area.
Wow.
That's another beautiful decision. Then, of course, I'm going to end with Bush versus Gore. And Bush versus Gore, you talk about being criticized for bias. Sandra Day O'Connor was the one who stopped the recount. She made the move. She was the binding decision. Stop the recount and give the election to Bush. And she was admittedly a friend of the Bush family, and she was admittedly a Republican.
Right.
And her husband was very ill, and she was going to retire from the court, provided there was a Republican president who would replace her, so to nominate in her place. So you say she didn't have any interest in the decision.
Clearly, she did.
And she was the one who said it would be, and she said made a comment, I think, at a meeting or a convention or during a speech, and she afterwards, and she said, "I thought I was doing what was best for the country." And what she thought was best for the country also happened to be best for her.
For her, yeah.
So that was a terrible, terrible, terrible decision. And they were counting the chads, and they had the hanging chads. And you remember, they were holding it up to the light to see if it went through. And the biggest, right here in Dade and Broward counties, the presidency was decided by 500 votes. Wow. 500?
Wow.
The United States presidency? And they wouldn't have a recount? You know what percentage that is?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like 1/1000th of 1%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nothing. So,
anyhow, my apology to the court, and I beg to be excused. I meant no disrespect. And I love the United States. I volunteered for combat. You can count on me. And I'm not at all un-American. And I don't mean to be overly critical, but we have the right and the ability to learn and criticize ourselves and learn. And Chief Justice did it when he changed the robes. Mm-hmm. And I respect him very much for that. It's very symbolic. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be great if they would reconsider some of their decisions and maybe take a little bit of time and make a speech or two here and there to the black community saying, hey, we wronged you badly and we're terribly sorry.
Yeah.
And that statute is gone and we've replaced it with Martin Luther King or something. Maybe that would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, something.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Lewis. You gave us some information I think we all had to hear. Always interesting. So thank you so much. And until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We are excited to announce that Lewis now has his own blog. Visit lewisrest.com to get insightful commentary to the Miami Memoirs podcasts, along with an analysis of current events, as only Lewis can provide.